I have a funny that I love sharing. It's John and Edith Brent and I were talking one day not too long ago, and they reminded me that I had written them a letter about my experiences with trying to have my back taken care of on my last trip to Europe. And I didn't believe all that I wrote afterwards, but every word of it was true. We all are so fortunate here to have Dr. John and his gentle way of treating us. And I thought, if any of you think he isn't gentle, then listen to this. In the first place, I slipped when I was in the airport out here and put my back out completely, and I was just in agony. This was the beginning of a 3-month trip. And so Dr. John was at the airport, and so he made me cross 4 seats and tried to give me an adjustment in front of God and everybody. And he really couldn't very well take care of me, but he did the best he could in that. But I was still in trouble. I said, I really did myself in with that fall I took at the airport and have been having a real rough time getting around. My body has been tied up in knots, and the pain has been excruciating. I went to a Mr. Perry, an osteopath in London, and he was good in his particular field, but I should have had another treatment in order for it to hold, but had to leave so I couldn't. The osteopaths there are purely anatomy men, no medical training. They are similar to the older method chiropractors. Even the medical men do not have the title of doctor, only the surgeons, and they are looked down upon as the men hanging on the fringe of the medical field. Strange? Today I had an appointment with a Dr. Korbler. This was written from Vienna, Austria. Today I had an appointment with a Dr. Korbler, who was, I guess, an osteopath. Brother, never in my life have I had such treatment. He had me undressed except for panties and stockings, no gown provided, and stand. Then I was made to move my body from left to right, backward and forward. Then he punched all the sore places. Next, I was asked to lie face down on the table while he poked some more on the sore places, after which he called his nurse to help him get me into the most peculiar position I've ever been in. I don't know whether my feet were wrapped around my head while my body was contorted in the... or whether or not my feet were wrapped around my head while my body was contorted in the form of a snake, while he pushed from one side to add insult to injury, he told me to relax. How in God's teeth can anyone relax in a position like that? However, I summoned my best yoga techniques to my rescue and thereby saved myself from having my bones broken in little bits. But there was more to come. I was then taken into another room, and they put me under an electric massage machine for about 10 minutes, after which time a woman came in and massaged my body with her hands. What a workout. She was not gentle. When she finished, she told me to get off the table. I could scarcely move by that time, and go into another room and get on another table. They wrapped a blanket around me, strapped my legs to a swinging board, the strap was so tight it impaired circulation, and then hoisted my body in the air until the weight rested on my shoulders. I was left that way for some time, I assume for the purpose of stretching the spine, and then after all feeling had ceased, I was lowered and unstrapped. Next, the doctor came back and gave me a shot in each hip, the part that always feels like a boil about to erupt anyway. I don't know what the shots were, but he assured me I would feel better by tomorrow. I live in hope. Then finally they put another type of electric machine gadget on my back with wet sponges attached, and away we went again. By that time I was too exhausted to care, and I found that I had pain in places that I didn't even know existed before. Finally I was released and told I could get dressed when David Ranney, that is, had called to make the appointment with the doctor. He was told it would cost 500 shillings or $30 American money for the first visit. They presented me with a bill for 1,002 shillings, which amounted to $60. When I objected, they said that the 500 shillings was just for the doctor. The treatments were all extra. Wow, I couldn't afford any more of those. I hope you will forgive me for rambling on this way, but I thought you might be interested in the details. So just think what a boon we have in Dr. Dittman by comparison. My sense of humor always has to come to the fore, you know, with all of these things. But it was just like that. I've never had a treatment like that in my life. I'd like to read to you this evening from The Vision, an article entitled Love Shall Prevail by Swami Ramdas. The power of love and harmony shall prevail in the end, either in the life of an individual or humanity at large. God or truth must triumph over the evil forces that seek to dominate over human lives. However dark the prospects of the world, harmony and peace appear to be, a clear vision of the future reveals the goal of world union and brotherhood as an inevitable consummation of the titanic struggle and strife through which mankind is passing. The glimpses of the cosmic spirit can be caught through all the apparent turmoil and chaos of the present day. So there is absolutely no reason to despair and apprehend that all will be lost. India is a land of spirituality, a land which gave birth to saints and sages who have reached the peaks of divine consciousness, who have plunged deep into the mysteries of life and found the immortal source from which the worlds have come forth. Their spirit and message will check and put down the forces of the lower nature that have caused the present highly disturbed condition of the world. In fact, in all the spheres of action, in all the modes and movements of nature, in all the turns the world's affairs take, there is one sole universal power at work. The individual gradually rises from the lower planes of existence, where he meets with conflict and discord, to the supreme state, where he realizes spiritual harmony and peace. Just as it happens in the life of an individual, so in the life of the world, a critical stage has come. A decided turn for a better order of things is bound to take place. Humanity is guided by the divine to consolidate all its various units into one federation, founded upon freedom and equality. We may respect the power of love and goodwill must triumph over the disruptive forces. Men have come to recognize that the petty ambitions of life are the bane of world's progress and evolution. An insensate hunger for material power and glory has been the cause of widespread distress and misery in the world. It is rank pride, false prestige, and sheer perversity that have stood in the way of unity of all nations of the earth. God's light will dispel the present darkness. He who watches with eyes that look into the future, having a heart enlightened with the light of love divine and leavened with faith that stands unshaken amidst the most violent storms of life, knows that God's will alone is supreme and it works always for good. Let us therefore face boldly the existing state of things and adapt ourselves with a composed heart to the great changes that are envisaged in the near future. Change is the law of nature, or the law of God. Let us ride on the crest of a new world wave that is rising to submerge all differences and create an atmosphere of peace and harmony. Life is immortal. Life is glorious. Life is a positive expression of the divine. Know that this is the truth about your life. Let us shed our weakness and fears. Let us live nobly, taking a firm stand upon the consciousness of our immortality. And act in such a way as to hasten the day of the liberation of humanity from the clutches of destructive forces. This is the mission of every human being. Let us wake up to it. Let our individual interests, outlook, and attachments transform into welfare of humanity, universal vision, and equal love for all peoples on the earth. Nothing short of our elevation to this height can help the evolution of humanity to its spiritual heritage. Truly, the salvation of an individual cannot be possible unless he identifies himself with the world consciousness, unless he realizes his oneness with all lives and beings. Hence, it behooves us to eradicate from our minds all thoughts of hate, jealousy, and ill will of every kind. Let divine love and peace have sway over us. Let us view all people in the world as the manifestations of the same divinity. Let us always think, speak, and act in terms not as mere individuals, not as communities, not as races and nations, but as members of the same world family, as children of the one divine parent, and as embodiments of the one divine power. That gives us hope in these troubled times. So many people ask me, when this terrible thing is going to happen to us, when the earth is going to open up and swallow all of us. I don't know. It opens up and swallows each one of us in its own way every day. But I don't worry about it, as I told you before. And strangely enough, so many have moved here to be with me. And I many times think, it says in the Bible, but for the elect no flesh shall be saved, but for the elect's sake those days shall be shortened. So either we will have become the elect by that time and we will live, or we all go down together. And if so, being together, why, we shall arise again together, so we'll always be together anyway. So what difference does it make? Well, obviously togetherness is what we're after. Okay, the Bible reading tonight is from St. John, chapter 2, beginning with verse 1. And the third day there was a marriage in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. And both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, they have no wine. Jesus saith unto her, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come. His mother saith unto the servants, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And there were set there 6 water pots of stone, after the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing 2 or 3 firkins apiece. Jesus saith unto them, fill the water pots with water. And they fill them up to the brim. And he saith unto them, draw out now, and bear unto the governor of the feast. And they bear it. When the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine, and knew not whence it was, but the servants which drew the water knew, the governor of the feast called the bridegroom, and saith unto him, every man at the beginning doth set forth good wine, and when men have well drunk, then that which is worse. But thou hast kept the good wine until now. This beginning of miracles did Jesus in Cana of Galilee, and manifested forth his glory, and his disciples believed on him. The more I get into the esoteric nature of the Bible, the more wonderful it becomes, because I realize that every single thing in here happens inside of us. It's written on a historical basis, in parables, if you will, so that man may understand in the outer sense that which happens within himself. But the more you get into it, the more you meditate, and God reveals each little tiny thing to you. And verse by verse, chapter by chapter, it unfolds. You realize the magnificence of this body. I have chosen for my subject tonight, marriage with the beloved. Marriage is a holy state. It is holy in the human sense, if we make it that way. And of course, the holiest of all marriages is our marriage with the bridegroom, or Christ, who is to be found only within ourselves. I think that people take marriage far too lightly these days. They do not try hard enough. They go into marriage wearing rose-colored glasses. And as all of us know, today there is merely a contractual agreement from the outer sense, of no spiritual marriage at all. That is so that you can try it out, and if you don't like it, then you can go on to the next one. And that's rather terrible to contemplate, because really, when you stop to think about it, it is tearing down the whole social structure of man and putting him in a position of complete, and I mean complete, what is the word I want? anyway, he doesn't feel a lack of security, insecurity. Think of the children that are born into this sort of a situation. Many times, one or the other leaves, and the child has to be raised by one parent. And the parent has to go out and work, and the child is put around from pillar to post, and he has no security whatsoever. Then we wonder why they go wrong, as we say, why they use drugs, why they drink, why they smoke, why they have sex at a very, very young age, and all the rest of it. We have forgotten the laws of God. I want to read to you also from Romans, beginning the first chapter, beginning with verse 15. Where Paul says, "So as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to every one that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. For therein is the righteousness of God revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, into birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie, and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who, knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them." I think that is pretty clear. And that takes care of homosexuality, it takes care of bisexuality, and applies to both men and women. Marriage is a holy estate, as I said, it is a holy covenant, a holy sacrament. And when you stand before a priest, a minister, a rabbi, a swami, whatever the title might be, you take a vow to get along together until death shall you part. We have forgotten all about that today. The divorce courts are filled, the calendars are filled with people asking for a divorce. There are exceptions to be made to every rule. And as I've said before, I don't believe in two people staying together when they're destroying each other. Or if there is adultery on one side or the other, certainly. That is the one thing that is given as the reason where a man may lawfully get a divorce. Only that one reason and no other. And yet, I feel that that isn't totally right either, because there are extenuating circumstances where one or the other for some karmic reason perhaps, or the two of them have come together, and one or the other is actually, through whatever they're doing, really killing the individual inch by inch. And so if they were separated, then they have the opportunity to go to God, to be God-realized souls. Whereas if they stay together, they will destroy each other, or one would be destroyed. And that is not right. And in here someplace it says that once in a while make an exception. So I go always by what God tells me. I've had many couples who have come to me who are living together without benefit of marriage. And most of them are now married. There are times when I make exceptions to this rule because I don't feel inside, as God directs me, that they were meant for each other at all. And to ask them to get married under those circumstances, I feel would be totally wrong. So I counsel them. I tell them not to live together. I talk to them about the Ten Commandments and what has been said in this chapter. And we go on from there. In most every case, it has worked out beautifully. Because when you have once attained the realization of your oneness with God, then you have transcended all laws, I have told you many times. You become the manipulator of the law. You are no longer subject to it. And you go by the direction which God gives you inside of yourselves. And so because of these things that existed before, which have now changed, there are many, many beautiful people, not only in this group, but in other groups and other cities as well. Marriage is a very important step. Many times you meet many people and are attracted to them. But in most cases, particularly today, there's a physical attraction. But once in a while, once in a great while perhaps, you meet somebody and you know instantly that you belong to that one. They belong to you. And you look at the reasons that man gets married, because he wants to belong to a person, and he wants to possess the person. This is true of both man and woman. When you get married and you take what you call love, you feel that you belong together. You don't want anybody interfering with that wonderful private relationship that you have. And so you decide that you're going to get married. So after time, you see the little idiosyncrasies in each other, and you don't like some of them because you haven't ever lived together. No matter how long you've gone together, how closely you've been associated, you haven't lived with a person. And many people reveal things about themselves after marriage that they never do before. And so you become unhappy, you become unfulfilled. But you've got to remember that each one comes with his own right of being, that no one has the right to take anyone's liberty away from them. Now, this doesn't mean that it gives license to any individual to go out and commit adultery or to go with any other individual except for the wife or the husband, whichever the case may be. There must be fidelity if the marriage is to work out. If you will each sit down and look at yourself and decide what you can do to change that which is wrong within yourself. Change yourself and you will change thousands, as the Master said, and I've repeated it, I don't know how many times, perhaps thousands. But that is the truth. And if you've come to the point where you've done everything you know how and still it isn't working out, at that moment you have no place to go but up. So you say to God, "Oh Lord, I've done everything I know how. So if any change is to be made, then you must help me. You must make the change." And at that moment, when you give up trying and doing things, then God comes in and he does the work. And you may come to a point, because you've been abused physically, mentally, emotionally, where you cannot take anymore. And all of a sudden, you just go inside of yourself and you surrender to God, and something happens to you. And you come out of that experience totally different. You have a wealth of love to give, whether you're a man or a woman. And perhaps your love is not reciprocated. And so that person misses so much when they don't acknowledge the love of the individual they're married to. They miss so much because it's given with all of the fullness of the heart in the beginning if the marriage is what it should be. And they miss a great deal. But something happens to you, and you find that you have risen above the power to be hurt. You've risen above the power for anyone to influence your life and hold you in bondage. All of a sudden, without having moved out of where you are free. You've escaped from your prison house. And you find that you can love and serve the person you're married to impersonally, but not be affected by anything they think, say, or do with regard to you. And that's a very interesting thing. Marriage, human marriage, is given to us for the purpose of growth. And if you will sit down and talk to each other sanely, not in anger, and then try to change yourselves. You don't have to change yourself into the image of someone else. But if there are little things that don't make too much difference, change. Be considerate of the other person. Think of how you would feel if someone were to talk to you perhaps as you talk to someone else sometimes. Each one has his own standard. He has his own feelings. And in the beginning, the ego is very, very sensitive. It's also very clingy. It's very possessive and all. The true marriage is that marriage where there is so perfect a love that there is also perfect trust. That you know that you can trust that person no matter where they are or who they are with, because you know deep in your heart that their love is solely for you in the human sense. And nothing can change it. And you feel a security. It's a wonderful thing. But marriage is given to you for the purpose of developing. And the human marriage is made after the marriage of the divine. God the Father, God the Mother, and God the Son. And just as in the spiritual marriage, so also in the human marriage, there is a son or a child brought forth in many instances. But even if it isn't brought out in the human sense, there comes a day when that Christ child must be born in each and every one of us. And that marriage must take place. And that's what it is talking about in here. Because the individual soul, when the love of God becomes so great that the soul reaches out in longing for its true mate or Christ within itself, whether it be man or woman, that one is lifted up and put into various spiritual experiences. So many questions are asked. This journey of the soul is a strange one. There is this electrical coil at the base of the spine, and the energy contained within it, the electricity contained within it, the intelligence contained within it is beyond belief. It is greater than anything that you can cognize or recognize in the outer sense. And you must remember that. So, instead of using this life force, spending it, depleting your body, getting rid of that sacred fluid within yourself, learn to retain it gradually through the methods which have been taught you, so that you may have that coiled serpent instead of going outward and downward, releasing substance from your body, that you may retain it and take it up the spine. Now, there are 7 spinal centers. In the metaphysical sense, there are said to be 12 orifices or openings to the body. The Jewish religion and some of the other ancient religions talk about the 9 gateways of the body. And of course, that refers to the 2 eyes, the 2 ears, the 2 nostrils, the mouth, and the rectum and the genital organs. So that makes 9. But there are 3 additional ones in the metaphysical sense. And one is the navel, and one is the medulla, through which the life force enters the body, and then there is the one through which this kundalini force, as it goes up the spine, goes through the brain, and then is coiled on top of the head, as you see, as I told you before, with the pictures of Mother Kali and the god Shiva. This is called, the sign is called the Shishumna Passage. But this serpent force doesn't start to really make an inroad on the experiences which the devotee goes through until the second center. And then it goes up, and there's an ita gland on the left, and spelled I-D-A, and a pingala on the right, and that's P-I-N-G-A-L-A. These are two nerves. And they go, the course of the kundalini follows up, and these nerves must come to the sixth center, and then they spread to the brain before the shishumna current starts to rise in the spine. And then when it has risen, when the individual soul has gone through the seven states of consciousness, or the seven worlds within themselves, all of which are described, the things that they meet in parables, again, in Revelations, as it goes up each spinal center, you are taken into the hell of your own being and into the heaven of your own being. Each one has a different number of petals in it, which are called lotus petals. And, of course, the bottom ones are the four square, the four petals. And it goes up like this, and you go through each one of these worlds. Each one has a different appearance as you see the spinal center. Each one has different colors in it because it has different minerals, various things in it. And each one produces a different taste in the mouth. Now, not everybody goes through this. And at the close to the end of the first experience, you taste just like bitter almonds in your throat. That's at the cervical center. It is at that time, in my own experience, where I lost body consciousness, and when I awakened, I found out that there was a male and female organ within myself, and that the manna from heaven was that substance which came down from the brain when the erect tongue was made to go into the throat and touch the certain little part in there that made this fluid come down, and that is the manna from heaven, and you can exist on it, subsist on it for days on end. But this is the truth within your own being, and isn't it wonderful that all of these things happen? It is quite a battle, quite a journey. And of course, when people go through these things, they're asking questions constantly because they're experiencing something within themselves that they have never experienced before. They're driven to run wild, so to speak. They want to get away from the everyday life. They want to do strange things because don't forget that the good thief on the cross directs them to think of God. It gives them revelations. It acts as a magnet to take them to God. And the opposing force, the bad thief, is constantly putting obstacles in the way. There are four main parts to the body. That's the brain, the heart, and the navel, and then the lower region. Now, this lower region, if you have lived, as so many of the young people, and some of them not so young today, are living, gradually, you lose your moral standards. And this fourth world doesn't come into existence until after the death of the physical body. But this is really hell. It is the place of the dead, where the person exists, but yet they are morally dead. And some of these people come back with, they return with the consciousness, but they are evil, and yet they are morally dead, and you cannot find God in them. And these are ones that have misused their power. They have been into black magic. They have been into sorcery. They have indulged in sex to the degree, and in other things of the senses to the degree, that it has destroyed their whole spiritual being. It is not a good state to be in. And people better realize that they may live it up today, but there's going to come a day when there's going to be a payment for it. A payment for it. Now, in Revelations, it speaks of the body as being a cube. And amazingly enough, if you unfold that cube, unfold first the two flaps on the side, and then take that from the top and bring it down, that cube is in the form of a cross. And again, the cross is the human body. And it tells about all of the different things that you meet, the dragons and the white horses and the red dragon, and all the rest of these things have to do with certain nerves and currents within the body and the unfoldment as the soul makes the spiritual journey up the spine and through all the realms which it has created within its own being. You have created your world within, and you will continue to be in trouble as long as you think, say, and do the wrong things which it is told about that are against the law of God. As I've said, I don't know how many times, you can change the laws of man, but you can never change the laws of God. They are immutable. And yet man's day is totally disregarding them. We have it all over in the newspapers and the television, out in broad daylight. It's terrible. I even read an article the other day where it told about a picture that is to be shown where the man and woman actually have intercourse, and it is shown in the picture, the whole thing. What are they thinking of? It's indecent. It's ugly. It is everything that shouldn't be. When man has within himself the power to rise above his humanness and to be gods on earth. In Revelations it tells about, I am the Alpha and the Omega. And the word Alpha is used for that one who is pure, who descends into heaven. He is pure and he descends into matter. And the more he descends into matter, then he is called Lucifer, or the fallen morning star. If you have God and the Christ within you, then the satanic force is also there. And you have created him yourself. And yet that satanic force is believed in to such a degree in the outer sense that man, through the power of his mind, can actually see the form of what has been envisioned to him, put into his mind, as Satan appear before him. And many have done this. It's an amazing thing. But it is true. You have that mark of the beast within you. You have the number of the beast, which is 666, and I've explained to you before that this is the six spinal centers below the seventh, and the positive and negative forces, and each one of the three bodily jars are attached to the spine and these six centers. And then we have the seven churches, the seven candlesticks, and the lights for them, and this is the universal current that is within every man. What a tremendous story this unfolds to be. In the beginning, when you have lived in the human sense, God knows for how many incarnations, and finally, your eyes are raised to the hills, and you feel within yourself the desire for union with your infinite beloved, then all of these tremendous things start to happen, and your whole world changes. You go through the fire, believe me. You go into the hell of your own being. You go into the heaven of your own being eventually. But you will notice that at this wedding of Cana, first the man's name was Jesus, and the mother of Jesus was there, and both Jesus was called and his disciples to the marriage. Now all of your 12 powers or disciples are called into play when this marriage is going to take place between the soul and the Christ within them, who is the bridegroom. And when they wanted wine, the mother of Jesus saith unto him, they have no wine. And he said to her, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour is not yet come, because he knows that it isn't time yet for this transition to take place within himself. And yet the mother, or the spirit of motherhood that comes within each one, it can be the Mary gland, knows that that must happen, so she tells the servants to do whatever he tells them to do. And so then there were six waterproofs of stone. Again, we refer to the six final centers, after the manner of the purifying of the Jews, containing two or three firkins apiece. And Jesus saith unto them, fill the water pots with water. And they fill them up to the brim. And then he saith to them, draw out now and bear unto the governor of the feast. And they bear it. And so when he tasted it, the water had been turned into wine. Now this tells about the transition between the human ego, which is likened unto water. When the Spirit, the real Spirit of God, starts to take place, then the transition takes place in the body. When the consciousness is released from the physical or the gross body of the five senses, then this baptism of blood, so many of the Orthodox Christians, particularly the Pentecostal, will say, have you been washed in the blood of Christ? Are you a true believer in Jesus? Have you been washed in the blood of Christ? And they don't even know what they are saying. Because this is an inner experience that comes to you when God lifts you up and puts you through it. And in my own case, it came towards the end of the first experience when I was in India. And I could hear the gurgling of the blood going in my veins as this transition took place, and the pain that accompanied it was beyond belief. As I've told you before, it is said in India that there are very, very few people who ever go through the baptism of blood. And of the few who go through it, very few live to tell the tale. It is the most painful thing in the world. And as each circulatory tract is finished, and the blood is transferred from the gross to the psychic or the astral body, then the navel is depressed. It is sewn up, so to speak. And you feel this very definitely, and it keeps on, and the pain continues, and you can hear all of this going on inside of yourself. And I remember asking God, will it be very long now? And he said, no, not very long. And I asked him why my navel was being depressed like this. And he told me that at the time I was born, that my body was attached to my mother's body in her womb by the umbilical cord. And the time I was born, the cord was cut. But that was the center of the nerve and blood supply. And it made sense. And it does, doesn't it? It makes sense. And so when this transition takes place and the new birth is going to come into being, then this also has to happen, and the navel is depressed, and it has to be sealed, so to speak, when the consciousness is transferred from the physical to the psychic or the astral body. Now, when that happens, then your consciousness, you, what you call you, is transferred from that gross body, and you are living in your astral or your psychic body. As I've told you before, in Ecclesiastes chapter 10, it speaks of this where it says a fool's heart is on his left. That's a man in his gross consciousness state. And a wise man's on his right. So you've earned the right to that much wisdom. And when that happens, then that which is water within you, transparent, sometimes it's been very muddy in the past, is changed into wine, the wine of the Spirit. And that is where the wedding takes place, where the Son of Man, Jesus, the Son of Man, has given up the ghost, given up the human ego, and then the marriage is going to take place with the divine. And so the water, then Jesus does whatever he does. He makes the supreme sacrifice and changes that which was human within himself to that which is divine. It's a tremendous thing. But after you have gone through these three states, then there comes the time when the human death occurs. You go down into the hell of the subconscious of your own being. You experience the things that you have thought, said, and done, not only this incarnation, but others. And then the time comes when the heart center is open. The Gordian knot, which is spoken of in metaphysical terms, unties itself in a very painful way. And then the one who was dead, that was which was Jesus, the Son of Man, arises out of the tomb of his humanness and goes forth to rise into the spiritual world. And that is the birth of the Christ within you. But it is also the marriage of the human and the divine. And that's why the wedding feast, so that this can happen. And so instead of having the two eventually, if that one continues on, And you must continue on. You cannot go backwards. You cannot fool with Mr. In Between. You must keep your mind on God and not go back and do the things that formerly interested your mind, your intellect. But you must keep your mind on God. You must use the techniques which were given to you and spend the time, which many times you don't want to spend. You want to be, again, attracted to the things of the world and the things that interested you before. And you must keep on disregarding those things. Put your mind on God and go the rest of the way. Now, I've told you about the Holy Eucharist that comes up to the throat, that seed which makes the journey from the brain down through all the source and goes again up the spine and returns to Galilee. I've told you about this. And it comes to the cervical center or the throat center. Now, in my own case, as I've told you so many times, I've held that in my own hand. I've seen it. I know what it looks like. But there are those who go through that, and they feel the sensation of this small seed or capsule, whatever it is that appears as Christ within you. And they swallow it without having it come out of the mouth, out of the throat, into the mouth, so that they can take it out in their hand and look at it. That doesn't mean that they haven't swallowed it and that they haven't risen to that same height. God put me through all of this in a very graphic way so I could tell you the truth of it. And then the risen Christ goes through that sixth center. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody can go to the Father except through me, through that state of Christ consciousness. Then you go into this tremendous blazing light of God within yourself. Heaven is within your own being. The marriage has taken place between the soul and God who is within him. And then he becomes the Omega, the arisen one again. And it's beautiful and it's wonderful. Then you are filled with the bliss, with the joy, with the happiness of God. And yet, depending on your destiny, many times, having paid the price on your own cross, you still continue to pay because you are packing a certain amount from the crosses of the many who follow with you to God. Now, I am teaching you the truth of what happens inside of yourself. And if you want to take this as being historical, that's fine. But I tell you that everything that is in every scripture in the world is describing what happens within man himself. And the people, the names of the people, the cities, the waters, the powers, the animals, all the rest of it, in the outer sense, are used to express what happens within man. So if he wants to live in his animal nature, then he has to take the consequences. But why should he do that when he has the power to raise himself out of the deadness of darkness and of matter and his animal nature and raise it into the heaven of his own being and become filled with the light and the love and the power and the intelligence of God? It is certainly a stupid thing to keep yourself in that lower state. And if you try, you can do it. There was a man once who was riding on a train, and he had been through a great many things. He had never gotten very far because he was always afraid. He was afraid he wasn't going to be successful. He had a poor self-image. He was afraid he couldn't do this, and people wouldn't like him and all the rest of it. Well, he happened to go into the dining car, and he was seated at the same table with a man who was a minister. This younger man was about 35 years old. The minister noticed that the young man was very, very disturbed. So he said to him, "You aren't happy, are you, my son?" He said, "No, I'm all right," he said. "I'm a little disturbed." He said, "Well, would you like to discuss it with me?" So the young man discussed with him all of his fears and everything. He said, "I'm just too afraid to go forth and do anything." And the man said a very strange thing to him. He said, "You have not been afraid enough." Now, isn't that a strange thing to say? "You have not been afraid enough." The young man said to him, "What do you mean?" He said, "I've lived in fear all my life." He said, "You have not been afraid enough," he said, "to let go of all of the negative things in your life and reach out for all that is good. If you have sufficient fear of not reaching your goals, then something has to be done about it. You don't have to live in that negative state. Be so afraid that you won't make what you want to out of your life. That you won't attain your goals. That through the sheer fear of not making it, that you get busy and do it. You've got to stay with it. You've got to make yourself a program. And if you slip back, you've got to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get going again. And go and go and go, no matter how many times you fail or fall, until you make it. And this doesn't take your humanness away from you. Those who are with me, more perhaps than some others, know that my life is filled with fun. Sure, it's the toughest life, the toughest job in the business. Because I am trying with everything I have to help each and every one of you to become perfect in God. So I bear a part of your cross on my own back. And I try and I try. And you slip and you slip. And you are stubborn and you are stubborn. And then sometimes I get the blame for it. And I think, my God, why do I get in the middle of this? Because I work with every part of the individual. I'm always involved in something. And yet, I get results by that very involvement. Where other gurus sit still, they speak about God, and the people come and bow their heads on their feet, and they listen and occasionally ask questions, and they go back, and it takes them the snail's pace to get where they're going. I get involved in every part of it, but it takes it out of me, physically, mentally, emotionally, to try to help you to do it. But I can't pack the whole load on my own back. You have to do your part. And it's not just a sometime thing. I would like the consciousness of each and everyone who is here to be firmly fixed upon God and for them to think about Him every moment of their lives, regardless of where they are, what they're talking about, or what they're doing. And you can do it. Because there's never a moment in my life, regardless of what I am thinking, saying, or doing, that I am not conscious of God's presence within me. And it's because the human that was within me is John the Witness, witnessing what the arisen Christ is doing. And he does whatever is necessary for whoever stands or sits before me. And I am always conscious of every thought, word, and deed that goes forth on that basis. This is what God is doing. I'm not doing it. He's doing it. But people misunderstand. They see me having fun. They see me cracking jokes and being hilarious sometimes or some other ways. And they think, oh, well, she can't be God realized or she wouldn't be acting like that. They expect me to be holier than thou, sanctimonious, wear sackcloth with ashes. No makeup, you know, no permanent in the hair, star of the body and all that sort of thing. And I think, as I've told you many times, that that is dishonoring the Christ in this temple, which is His. I have the right to be myself, even as you do. And I am both human and divine, even as you are. The only difference between us, and that difference is fast disappearing because there are many who are going through spiritual experiences now, is that I know that I have realized my oneness, and you yet do not realize that you have a whole universe inside of yourself. That if you will only use your human marriage to help you, to take you to the divine, that you will have accomplished the purpose for which you are together and not otherwise. Because if each of you try, and each of you serve God in one another, if each of you is patient with one another, if you see the good points and not the faults, then the day will come when that love that you had, which was sort of a euphoric thing and seen through rose-colored glasses, will become a vital living thing that will give you a richness of love and a richness of love in God that you have never even dreamed possible. And you will feel fulfilled. You will do things together, but yet each of you will fulfill your own destiny. You will bring forth your own gifts, and you will complement each other. You don't have to be alike in every way, because each one, sometimes the very difference makes all the difference. But stick with it. Hang in there. Unless there is one of the reasons that I spoke of. I may have told you this before, but I remember one girl that I met one time who was very disturbed mentally, and yet she wanted to be on the spiritual path. She was married to a man, and God told me that if she didn't leave him, that he would kill her. And I told her this. Oh, no, no. He was a big seven-footer. The very next day, he came and pushed the front door in like it was a matchbox and took out after her. She went out the back door and over to the neighbor's house and told her each inch of the way that he was going to kill her. She got rid of him. Now, these are cases that are unusual, and certainly you can't suggest that somebody stay with somebody who is apt to take their life, or who tries to, or who so does such terrible things to them that they are killing them inch by inch. To me, that would be a crime. It would be a sin to keep people like that together. But that is not so in the average marriage. So everything in the human marriage that happens is but a preparation for that divine marriage when you attend that way. And the water within your being, the humanness within you, is changed into the wine of the Spirit. And you will have found your Christhood. And when you realize your oneness with God, then all the meanings gradually unfold as God directs within yourself. And you see, you can go through this whole book and you can liken it to everything that has happened within yourself because you know you were there. It isn't a faith through belief, but it is a specific and definite knowledge through experience. It is a thing that you have earned. You have earned the pearl of great price which sits in the midst of the thousand petal lotus of the brain. And your whole body is filled with light. And you know indeed that you are in heaven.